of the exciting releases from last year's Audio Drama Hub Podfest. This time, a groovy panel with some amazing folk from the very depths of audio fiction awesome. We have chairing this panel Fiona Thrale of Dashing Onions Audio and Wireless Theatre. Funky. Maximilian John of Definitely Human. The Cool. Karen Heimdall of Y2K and Chica. The Joyous. Chris Gregory of Alt Stories. And Super Upper Groovy. Emily C.A. Snyder of Hamlet to Hamilton. And so much more. Enjoy this talk on writing for audio fiction from the Audio Drama Hub Popfest 2022.
We come now to the first of two feisty panels. This one sponsored by the podcast host.
Huzzah!
I used to work for them. The burning topic of the day for our panel of joy is writing, publishing the form with our wondrous chair, Fiona Thrale, and guests Maximilian John, Emily C.A. Snyder, Chris Gregory, and Karen Heimdall.
Woo-hoo! Okay. Welcome to all of our wonderful panelists today. We're going to be talking about writing right now. So I think rather than me introduce them, I'd like, if we go down the panel here, if you could just introduce yourself, say a little bit about what you write and why you love writing what you write. Do you want to start, Chris? Thank you.
I will. Thank you. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Gregory. I run a production company called Alternative Stories. We mostly sponsor Tom Crowley. We also make a lot of standalone drama. I also produce The Dex Legacy, which is a sci-fi serial. I do a bit of teaching of writing audio drama as well for an organisation called Pen to Print. Who have what I believe is the only audio play writing competition of which I'm a judge, and there are some prizes, and I'll tell you a bit more about that later. But it, you know, come and talk to me about that. So if you are a writer and you fancy having a script produced, then that would be a good way to do it. Thank you.
Right, I'm Karen Heimdall, and I produce basically solo Y2K and Cheka. Cheka is a sci-fi show, and Y2K is a slice of life drama. I also traveled here from Sweden, possibly. I am the furthest traveling person here today. I do not know, but maybe. And I basically write emotional drama, and then this last sort of set, I set it in space, and people seem to like that more for some reason. Not sure why, but so I write the same thing. I write about emotions and relationships and people and, in space now.
Hi, my name is Emily C.A. Snyder. I am the host of the podcast, the educational podcast, not audio drama. I'm so sorry. Hamlet to Hamilton, exploring verse drama. Because I come from the world of the theater and teaching people how to write like Shakespeare, which I'm currently working on my PhD at the Shakespeare Institute in Stratford. So you, at least on this panel, probably traveled the furthest to be here. Audio drama-wise, though, I've been a voice actor, largely for U.S. pieces, and then Sarah and Fiona and folks have dragged me happily into the world of writing for entirely UK productions. No, I lie, because Quinn is not UK, it is US, but we got a UK actor, so. And what I specialize in, I would suggest, with all my work, is fairly poetical language and sort of epic themes and, very much emotions. But no, I don't do the space thing.
In space.
I don't do the space thing, actually. I was thinking about it. I do riffs on Hamlet, and I do, is it space if it's just time travel, but it's a sexy Doctor Who? So I guess my work actually has tended to be in audio, more monologue with the person listening as the scene partner for the person speaking. So I'm interested to hear what you think I do.
Hi, I'm Maximilian John. I am a writer and producer at Definitely Human. We make Mars Corp and The Monster Hunters and The Bunker and Down, and then a lot of some non-scripted stuff as well.
Okay, thank you, all our panel. We've got a really, really wide range of writing here, which is exactly what we were hoping to have. It's almost like there was planned or something. So, first of all, starting with Max. Max, as you mentioned, with Definitely Human, you have been collaborating in your writing with Matthew Woodcock and David Knight on Down for the 24-part series. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to ask, how did you approach that as a writing team? And does that help to sort of expand ideas, or is it more freeing or less?
Well, I suppose for me it was expanding my own horizons, because it was not something I would have done myself. You know, it was kind of an experiment, because we hadn't written, like, as a team, all of us together, each of us choosing scripts. So we, David and Matthew wrote the outline for the show, and then we broke it down into episodes together, and then just basically everyone choose some scripts, go away, write them, bring them back, and we'll all send them to Matthew, and he'll make, you know, make sure everything lines up. That's how we did it. It was a very new experience for me doing it that way, because either have before written by myself or with David. We've been writing together since 2013. And that is a very close writing relationship, that we do everything together. We break the characters together and all the stories. And then when we script it, we literally write the dialogue together in the same room. So it was very weird to have characters that I hadn't developed and then have to kind of, you know, inhabit that space and then send it off.
Did you find that hard?
Yes. Hard and unpleasant. Hard. And and I told them so. Right. And it was totally not what I was used to, but that was why it was worth doing, you know? Yeah. Because otherwise I'd have stayed in my comfort zone the rest of my life very happily.
So do you feel that the end product was a better one because of that, or...?
I couldn't know.
Okay.
Matthew's very proud of it, and that's enough for me, because it's what he wanted to do, so hopefully I did a good job there.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but I did notice that my episodes had far more gags in them than their... Clearly they were going for, this is a sci-fi thriller, and I'm like, yeah, but it's a funny sci-fi thriller. They're like, no, it's a sci-fi thriller. And I'm like, yeah, okay, but, you know, life has jokes in, so there'll be jokes, right? Yeah, so we came in different directions, but hopefully it all sort of lines up.
Cool. Thank you. That's really interesting. And if we move to Karen next.
Yes.
Karen has very kindly stepped in at the very last moment just to explain. Emily Inkpen was going to come, but very sadly can't be with us tonight because of illness. So thank you, Karen, for being here at the very last minute and now being bombarded with questions.
No worries. I only missed Emily. I would have loved to have talk to her. Anywho.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, because you were talking about sci-fi and Shaker, and it is a sci-fi story, not wanting to spoiler, about sort of missing humanity. And I was wondering, in that sci-fi story, you have AIs and against sort of humanity. Can you explain, like, maybe how sci-fi as a genre, does that kind of liberate your writing and understanding of humans through that kind of thing?
I mean, yes, I think so. Because I wrote a very sort of true-to-life story first, and that was almost, I think, sometimes painfully literal story, where I followed people for a whole year. I followed a group of characters for a whole year. And I think as a writer, I felt that I sometimes backed myself into a corner of, you know, showing every moment of every bit of that scene that they were in, and, you know, nerding out into researching, even though I was alive and grown up in the year 2000. But, you know, it was 22 years ago now, so I didn't remember everything. So I did a lot of research. And, of course, sci-fi, you don't really have to do research, or at least if you do a lot of research, which I ended up doing, you don't have to stick to it, because you can make stuff up, as long as you sort of make it plausible within your world. And so what I did with Cheka is I had this story of a woman and her daughter alone on the moon, and something happened on Earth. So that was my premise. And they, Earth went silent, they were alone, they didn't know what happened. And then the series, Cheka, starts when Cheka is all alone in the world. She's the daughter in the story, and she leaves the moon and tries to find other humans. So she believes she might be the only human left in existence. So loads of, you know, existential dread in space there. So what that allowed me to do after, you know, writing that during COVID and during isolation was to take that experience, my experience of all of our experience, I suppose, of not connecting with anyone and feeling really alone and feeling really sort of scared of, is this my new reality now? I mean, it's been a while, but you remember that feeling, right? And sci-fi as a genre, I think, can elevate that. If you sort of start there and then you can elevate it and say, okay, the stakes are really, really high now. You are possibly the only human left alive. What are you going to do? And I think in that way, sci-fi is really helpful. And you also asked about the AIs. So Cheka, I guess, is a collision of ideas. One of them is that woman alone with her daughter on the moon. The other idea is, what if there were accented AIs? What would happen if AIs were language-based and had accents and personalities that are sort of tied or not tied to those accents? And that started with Charlotte Norb, who is a Danish actress and a good friend of mine, who asked me, can I audition for an AI? And I was like, yes, of course you can. That's a brilliant idea. I want a Danish AI. Oh, and their name is Hygge. Hygge means coziness, sort of, in Danish. That's brilliant. And it's a very positive AI. And oh, and you know how that story starts going? And that led me to other AIs. So in Cheka Season 1, which is out, there are three different language-based AIs I've now written, and we are producing Season 2, and there will be more. So loads of languages there.
Lovely. Thank you so much. So we've sort of looked at the collaborative side. We've looked at the genre side. And Chris, you teach workshops on writing for audio drama for Pen to Print. We obviously don't want to spoil your workshops, but you talk about the language, the script that isn't heard between the team. So can I ask you about that?
Yes. So it's a weird world for a writer working in audio drama, because most writers want their words to be read. But clearly, if you write an audio drama script, it's not going to be read, it's going to be heard. But I think there are also bits that you need to write as a writer that will not be heard as part of the script. So I call this part of my workshop, writing in sound. And Tom's... cheers, Tom. Covered some of this already in terms of the kind of direction, what we would call stage directions if this were a play script, but the sound directions, the foley. I think there are some other things that you wouldn't necessarily put actually as directions within the script. So an example of that would be mood. So what's the mood of this scene? And I've seen, particularly during the pandemic, when we would, I mean, you will probably remember that time when we were doing everything asynchronously and people were sending in their lines. What we were finding was that people were misinterpreting scenes. So they were doing it in a kind of jaunty way when actually it was quite a sad scene. And so we felt we needed to do kind of mood boards for scenes. And a mood board could be some music. Not necessarily that we'd use that piece of music in the scene, but that it sets a mood. We've had writers do pictures describing a scene. Bright sunshine, a scene like that, tells you something about the mood, because we all feel a bit more jaunty when the sun's shining and the sky's blue than if it's the sort of day that we've had here in England over the last week. So all of that stuff helps to set a mood. And I think the other thing that I think is really important is the background of characters. What are the important events in their life that have shaped them? How did they get to the point that we hear them for the first time in the drama? Everything in your past as a person shapes the person you are today. So although in a drama we're hearing a snapshot of that person, we need to know a little bit more for the actors to play that role convincingly. And this is where, in the Dex Legacy, it's a shame that Emily isn't here, because we invented this thing called the ink pen process. And the ink pen process, or TIP for short, but she doesn't like me calling it that, is all about letting the actors know what they need to know about the background to the character to give them a basis for playing it. And during the pandemic, we ended up with Emily just recording these videos. And it was a brilliant touch, actually, because we knew who we'd cast at that time. So Emily was able to say, "Hi, David, it's Emily here." So it felt very personal. It was a real connection from the writer to the actor. And then she'd just give some background, stuff that's not in the script at all, to help the actor inhabit that role. Now, if you were in a studio setting, I would still argue that the preparation, the groundwork of actually explaining who that character is, you'd still want to do that before pitching up in the studio, because, you know, as you know, in a studio, clock ticking, it's like being in a taxi, isn't it? Time is money and all of that sort of thing. So you want to get that through as early as you can so that the actors can live with that character a little bit before you stick them in front of a microphone and say, right, go. So all of that is really important. I think the other thing is the opportunity for actors to interrogate a writer. I mean, it sounds like, you know, lights in the eyes and you would tell us the truth. But it's not like that. Sarah was in one with us last week, in fact. An opportunity to meet the other actors on a Zoom call, meet the writer most importantly, and, you know, just ask questions, kick ideas about, try some voices, and the writer can say, yeah, that might work, that might not. And so all of that, I think, is really important. We would then record that Zoom and put it into a folder so that everyone's got access to the Zoom. They don't have to make notes during the Zoom. They can go back and watch or listen to the Zoom. The other part of the unseen script, I think, is the scene-by-scene breakdown. So for every scene, we would say, what's the mood? Where do we start this scene? Where do we need to get to at the end of this scene? And what are the milestones within the scene that we use to get there? And the reason why I think that is important, well, first of all, we do all of these on cards or on little stickies, and it means that you can actually rearrange them if you think that would be a better way of telling a story. If you do all of that before you do the main bulk of your writing, you can also write in these kind of, they're like the bucket and the writing is the water that goes into it. It's going to be the shape of the receptacle that you design in your scene-by-scene guide. The other great thing about it is that if we know where a scene starts, where it needs to get to, and what are the milestones along the way, there is scope then for actors to do a little bit of ad-lib when they come to record it. And so all of that in the unseen, unheard script, I think, will help with the preparation of your drama, get everyone into the right mood, understand what the mood, what the tone is, then I think you'll get better performances from your actors. The key to it, really, I think, I mean, to summarise everything, make the writer, and as a writer, be part of your little team, your creative team. I know in the world of indie audio drama, we are often playing multiple roles, aren't we? We may be acting in it, directing it, doing the sound design, and we may have written it as well. But if that isn't the case, make sure the writer, and if you're a writer, you know, elbow your way in to make sure you can be part of that production process.
Thank you. Now, that's brilliant. And actually, from what you're saying about the preparation, actually leads very well, beautifully, to what Emily does in a way, because you're working in verse drama, which is obviously stylized, and it's maybe something that maybe actors don't do quite as regularly, some of them. So I was just wondering about your preparation and how it works, the pros and cons of writing a sort of a more experimental drama, if you want.
Sure. So in your notes, you actually said writing non-naturalistic audio drama. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what's not naturalistic about speaking poetry out loud? Because I definitely was 19 years old at university, at a day job, at a register. Someone brought up something to the register they weren't supposed to. And I looked them dead in the eye and said, please return that from whence it came. And then we both just stared at each other for a while. But if you are interested, so there's two different things. Verse is not poetry. Poetry is not verse. All right. Poetry is embellishment. It's ornamentation. It's about how the language sounds and expresses and feels on the tongue. Whereas verse is writing something that has a line break. And that's basically it. So you've got paragraphs, which like Neil Gaiman, for example, might be highly poetic, but you could have a line break that just says, and then I want to, well, you know, yeah. So anyway, I was thinking, and that's actually using verse techniques, right? It's using verse, and what verse does in particular is it functions like spoken musical notation. So I find, so for example, actually, you and I collaborated most recently on if any of you know the Quinn app, it is an audio erotica application, and I'm actually quite proud of this.
Yeah, they should be.
It was a monologue, but a 90-minute movie. That's the sexy Doctor Who. I didn't know who the speaker was going to be. Like, I wrote this and threw it into the wild, which was nerve-wracking, because usually I work with actors and I have their voice in my ear and I know what they can do. But regardless, I found myself using verse techniques even without knowing who the actor was going to be. It ended up being, I believe it's okay, it's out. You can download the Quinn app. and it's Thomas Doherty, who's in the new Gossip Girl on HBO and was the sexy guy in The Invitation. It's very good. please go and make them hire me again. Anyway, but, you know, and they showed, matter of fact, Fiona said, oh, it's going to be this guy. And I'm like, oh, he's pretty. Can he talk? And then the other question is, could he sort of read the verse work that I'd done in there, where I would put in line breaks, where I would put in white rather than saying beat. I would just have a line of white, or where the words were cascade across the page. And he did, because the thing is, when you're writing in verse, it's a visual thing. You're giving visual clues to the actor, or you're doing things where you're running words together, right? So it could be, a line of white, and then, I love you, 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 with like no spaces between any of the words. And the actor knows what the mood is. Then. And the other thing you're doing too for the actor is you can control the breath of the actor. Who's an actor in here? Can I have a cheer? Anyone? Or hands up? Yeah. Okay. We're all silent actors. But when you get that sort of, I'm going to capitalize this. I'm going to put this in italics. I'm going to underline it. It's in all caps. There's ellipses after it. When you put in all this essentially musical notation for the actor, when you use line break to control their breath, to say, you will keep breathing here, it will actually do things to the actor's emotions where they don't have to reach for an emotion. So you're giving them essentially the music. And I do think you can, therefore, if you want to go home and do a workshop, grab anyone that you like. I say go and listen to Seth Meyers' A Closer Look, and put it on and transcribe out what he says, then go through and every time he takes a breath, press return. And then go and give it to your friend and see if they naturalistically get his cadence. And I'm telling you, they will. So I find verse, well, while the language can be very poetic, and some things you write poetic, some things you don't, it depends on who the character is, right? If it's a poetic character, then they can say, even while in a telling someone to return a copier machine that they'd brought up from the back and they weren't supposed to, you could look at them and say, return that from whence you came, because I am an Emily that would be at a register and say that to someone. But it's rather like the joke thing. But someone else, the person next to me, wouldn't. So I could speak more about poetry, but I think the more crucial thing, honestly, is verse. You can put any style of language on verse. And even, I think, if the actor is not necessarily trained in Shakespeare, there's something visual that you're giving the actor, which is a gift. And they could take it, they could leave it, but you're giving them a gift of the music and therefore the emotions that just spring out from the music that you've created for them. It's called The Inventor's Apprentice. It's on the Quinn app.
That was superb. Thank you, Emily, and great promotion. All of you obviously writing very differently, very different styles, very different techniques. Here, how many people write here or have written for audio? Yeah, exactly. So many people. Brilliant. This is good. And obviously, everyone is doing such a wide range of styles and so on. What would you recommend if people want to expand what they're doing to write a better piece the next time? How would you go about that? Is there any way that you can measure whether you're improving as a writer?
I mean, I think if you want to improve as a writer, just replay what Emily just said and apply that to all of your writing henceforth. Yeah, that would
yes.
work. Yes. Do that thing. More seriously, perhaps, how do you improve as a writer? I don't know. I write, and then sometimes it's easy, and sometimes it's really hard, and sometimes I really, really struggle, and sometimes it flows. And I think that what you can do as a writer is just try to stay true to the story you want to tell, and just go for that. And not worry so much about, you know, is it good, is it bad? You can figure that out later. Just write the thing.
I would suggest get to be well-rounded. The more you know about the particular craft you're trying to write for, so try editing something, try voicing something, listen to a ton. But the more you, when you're writing a script, okay, when you are writing a script, you are not writing a finished product. You are writing a blueprint. You are communicating to the people who are going to interpret your work. So everything you write is a communication to your audio designer. It is a communication to your actor, as much as it is a communication to your audience. And so I think if you work directly with actors, and if you take their feedback, if they say your line different, they said it right, you wrote it wrong. Simple as that. If they can't say your line, you wrote it wrong. Okay? If the audio designer, this actually happened, I didn't put in enough notes. And I was just like, I don't know, they'll figure it out. And I like put in sort of a general note at the top, and then I wrote because it was a monologue, you know, so a bunch of monologues. So the actor did fine. And the audio designer did exactly what they were supposed to, and it ended up being like a good 10 minutes of the same audio soundscape. And it was awful. And that was on me. I did not communicate to the audio engineer what needed to happen. So think about your work, I would suggest, as communication. And I'm a kinesthetic person. So I do suggest trying to do someone else's job just to know what you wish someone were saying to you while you're attempting to do it. But remember, what you're writing is communication. It is not a finished product.
So I suppose my tip for improvement would be as you both said, I think listen to stuff, listen to, you know, we're not looking to copy or emulate, but we're looking to listen to the style of writing. We're looking to, you know, find out that really mysterious thing that is often attributed to writers, that kind of lightness of touch, that, you know, it feels natural, it trips along, it feels like the sort of conversation you might hear in the street or between friends or whatever. I would say that the worst possible time to realise you haven't achieved that is when you've made the drama and it's out there on the podcast and people are listening. So just as a novelist, probably the most important thing, you know, your first draft is like getting a big box of Lego, pouring it all over the floor and thinking, well, that's a mess. And so your editing process is putting that together. All the tools are there, all the elements of your story are there, but you've got to put it together. So I would say once you've done that, you know, maybe that first edit will be based on beta listeners or beta readers. I mean, I say listeners because if we're talking about audio drama, don't give them a script to read. You know, get them in and maybe have them read one of the characters, or you and some other friends read some characters. So it's got to be judged by your beta listeners, straight readers, in the format you want it to go out as an audio drama. So they've got to be listening to the sounds. And just take on board what they say. It's very difficult for your best friends and family to be really objective. So get people in that will say, Chris, this is crap. You know, maybe not quite as blunt
in a constructive way.
But in a constructive way. And, you know, learn from that. Listen to that advice. And then when you put that Lego together, listen again. Has it improved? Have we actually lost something in the being really technical and putting it together in this way? Have we lost some of the lightness of it? You know, you may need to go through two or three drafts or listenings before you start to feel that you're getting somewhere that you'd like to be. But, you know, I suppose my plea to you as a writer, first time writer, is your podcast drama will be out there for a long time with a lot of people listening to it. Don't cringe every time you get a play thinking, oh God, I really wish people...
Can I quickly say though, embrace your juvenilia. Embrace that you've got to start by not doing your best work. And I love reading or listening. I love consuming great people's early work, because then I'm like, I can do it too. So if you put that out there and then you keep improving your skills, but then one day someone else is going to be able to listen to your thing and not be like too afraid to do it. So I think juvenilia is a great gift as well that you give to the world.
That's interesting, because I deliberately go through the internet and delete all my juvenilia, everything that I don't
bring
like.
It back.
No. No one can see that. It's shameful. I feel like the fastest way to improve is to work with as many different people as possible, to seek out new people to work with, because everybody, there's many ways of working as there are people, and from each person you learn something new, and you add it to your own toolbox, and, you know, proclaim it as your own later. It's a very fast way to improve, is to deliberately seek out new ways of working in things that make you uncomfortable.
Fantastic. Yeah. Actually, to add to that, 11th Hour Audio, I expect most people are familiar with this. Yeah, it's a brilliant way because it's structured to work with other people. That's the whole point of it. So it always comes along in the month of October. It's basically a podcast event that happens every October. You're allowed to write a script beforehand. It can be no more than 10 minutes. But then you need to work in a team with people that you've never worked with before. And Monique Boudreau and Matthew Boudreau run it. And they will help you to pair up with other people. You can do as little as you want. You can even do job shares, that kind of thing. And it's a wonderful way every year. It's always horror shows, which always come out then on the 31st of October. So do that. That's 11th Hour Audio. And if you go to their website, you can find out more and do it next year because it's a wonderful way. Yeah, thanks, Max. That's a good idea, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Lovely. I was just going to say. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, did everyone catch that? Yeah, 24-hour hubris as well. Yeah, check that out too for the same kind of idea, but in 24 hours, which must be a killer. Yeah.
I've done it. It's fun.
Yeah.
And time zones.
No, exactly. Wonderful. Okay, thank you to all our panel. Do we have any other questions from the floor? Would anyone like to ask anything at all? Yes, Michael, do you want to... I think there might be a microphone winging its way. Here we go.
About first drafts and Lego box, I think it was. But what are your thoughts on having your work... I would say might not be a good term, but professionally edited, as in you see a lot of people who write and they produce and they take the whole process, but sometimes maybe there should be somebody stepping in and going, I'm going to take this and I'm going to review your script, give you some feedback. So what's your thoughts on that?
Other building bricks are available, I should say. But I think just as in, again, if you're a novelist and you are published, the chances are that a lot of the edit will have been done by a sub-editor at a publisher, actually. I think while we all like to think that we are the single best person to write this script, I think there is not necessarily a professional editor, but someone who perhaps has done it before to look over it, put in a few ideas, suggests maybe we could do this, maybe we could change the order of things, which is where that scene by scene guide, that part of the Lego box, comes in. But yeah, I mean, I think we should certainly be open to it. I think that's true of every craft within audio drama. Be open to it as we learn. But I think that could work, so long as it doesn't ever cross the line where more of it is written by someone else than is written by you. Mm. I think that's probably the tipping point where I'd say it becomes a bad idea. But for the odd edit here and there, I think that's a really good plan.
I'm not sure, Michael, if you meant to sort of hire someone to edit it. Is that what you were thinking? Or
I wasn't really being specific. it could be a peer. It could be somebody else on the team. But really, it was about the value of having somebody else look at the script, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I think Chris answered that, and I would wholeheartedly agree. You do need somebody else's eyes, or maybe several someone else's eyes on your script before you release it to the actors and then to the world. I work with two script consultants for Cheka. One is for The Science, which is Dwayne Farver, who produces Manifestations. Check that out. And another is my very best friend in the world, who does no other podcast-related things, but knows me really well and knows the kind of stories I want to tell. So, yeah, get people to read your stories.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially if there's someone that knows you and how you work and understands what you're getting at. But yeah, I can't think of anyone who would say, don't show it to anyone. You know, it's... because it's so easy to get tunnel vision when you're working on something for a long time and to only see what you intended. I feel like it's always important to get somebody else to look at it. It's only advice, isn't it? It's not, you don't have to follow it.
Ironically, the three things that Sarah has done of mine, I didn't get other eyes on, and and I wish I had. Same thing. Okay, so there's this curious thing. Sometimes if you're commissioned for a piece and they want it really quick, they just take your first draft and then you're like, I hope this is good. What I would suggest is trying to get in on the table read if they won't bring anyone else in to look at your piece, or if they themselves are incapable of giving you other notes. if you need a sensitivity reader, if you're writing outside of your scope of knowledge, really lobby the best you can to get a sensitivity reader in and for them to be paid. That is crucial. When I can't have someone else's eyes on it, again, maybe it's because I come from an acting background. I love having actors' eyes on the piece. And for them to be able to tell me, I always ask sort of, what are you experiencing from within the character? And they'll tell you when you've made a left turn too quickly and they need just like half a page more to get there. Or I'm thinking specifically of a piece that I wrote for this stage where, I mean, if you can humbly take in other people's lived experiences. In this scene, I was writing someone's significant other had just attempted suicide, and I wrote a scene for the person wherein they were very upset. And fortunately, this actor knew me well enough that he felt confident coming up to me and saying, Emily, you've written this wrong. I've been through this experience, and this was my reaction, so you go back and you write me different words. And I did. And it says strong scene. So I wouldn't discount, I mean, and I guess maybe it's, I'm advocating for the actors because the actors so often, the experiences, you get the words and then you make it work. But the actors are sitting there with opinions in their brain and with lived experience. And again, I guess I just highly suggest if you can't have an extra editor, you've got your actor, and let them speak and be humble enough to take their advice.
And there, are you suggesting that they read it or suggesting that you actively workshop it? Do you
think? Both. I love workshopping. Again, my company in New York City, that's primarily what we do, is we help develop scripts, and we'll get different actors on the same script over the course of a development over a year so that you're getting different experiences, also so an actor isn't believing that the role is definitely theirs. Which happens. And you get that feedback, you get that live in the moment. And again, since I know for myself and for many of the writers that we've worked with, they do tend to write chronologically. So you can make course correction early in your work. Because if a big plot moment happens here and the actor is going, oh, I wouldn't do it that way, and every actor you tested against is saying that, then you can do a course correction early on and make some questions of yourself. Whereas sometimes I guess I feel an editor will come in. I know I've done this for people's work when I dramaturge their work, when they hire me as an editor, and you have to hire me as an editor because I hate reading scripts. So you have to pay me money to read your script. But I'm trying to improve what's already there. Whereas I feel an actor will often say, it's just wrong, man. I can't play it. And I find that more valuable in some ways. Like I can only as an editor buff up what's there. And if you let an actor speak, they'll tell you the truth.
I completely agree with you. And as a voice actor myself, I try to sort of give that to producers and directors when I can. However, I am also always conscious of the actor's time and energy and what's going on. So while I try to be very, very open that I want them to tell me if this is wrong, as you say, because sometimes what I write is all wrong. So please tell me that, and please sort of give me whatever reactions you have. I also don't want to use them as free labor because I'm only paying them for acting and I'm not paying them enough. So there are two sides to that story.
Or pay actors better.
Always.
But yes, absolutely. Yes.
Wonderful. I think we probably have time for one tiny, or is it pushing it a bit? Yes, if it's a really short question, no meaning of life things. Yeah, would you like to?
You were saying about reaching out to people and working with as many people as possible. Do you have any advice for how to find people who need people to work with, other than going to events like these, which we're already doing?
I feel like the community is quite open for people who want to collaborate. I found there's always people looking to work on stuff together. Personally, Discord, Twitter. I mean, Twitter still exists. It does still exist.
Are you sure? So you can...
Not sure.
Yeah.
We...
So if you literally just put it out into the world, you will get a response. I have found that. Also, people that you admire, you can just message them. And I think you'll be surprised at how often they are open to working on things together.
And also, just to point out with Audio Drama Hub, you are allowed to post. You can make your own post if you want to hire somebody or find other like-minded people. It's only promotions that we kind of kill people for. So, if you want to hire anyone else, that's fine.
I mean, events like this are great.
Yeah.
So talk to everyone here. And I'm sure there's lots of people that would like to work with you.
I think it does depend on what it is you want to do. Because if you want a voice act, that's quite easy to sort of start auditioning and start doing free work, perhaps, to start off with. If you want to write and you want someone else to sort of sound design and produce and pay all your actors, that's a harder sell. Basically. So maybe start in small things, like we're talking about the 24-hour hubris, we're talking about the 11th-hour audio. There is also loads of little things coming out that you can sort of submit your writing to. And I'm sure that Chris has more suggestions on that note as well.
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, I would say that, bird sight is maybe dead, but there is elephant sight, which you should certainly investigate. I would absolutely condone talking to as many people as possible, seeing, I've spoken to professional musicians whose work I really admired and said, look, I'd love to use some of your music. And to my surprise, they've said yes. So, ask the question. You can only be told no. just be brave enough to ask. You've got to offer something in return, clearly. If they're giving you something for free, which, let's be clear, there's not a lot of money in this game, unless possibly you're Dirtmags. But so we are working on very limited budgets. So lots of this may well be payment in kind. So what can you offer in return for someone working with you? I think is a really good thing to have in the back of your mind before you start asking those questions.
Thank you. Thank you all very, very much to our panel, Chris Gregory, Karen Heimdall, Emily C.A. Snyder, and Maximilian John. Thank you all so much. Thank you.
Right. I was going to say all their names, but you did my job for me. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Michael.
Also, thank you to you, Fiona, for
thank
chairing
you
it.
audiodramahub.com for any updates, and send us your competition entries for Dashingly Quirky Live and our Sound Effects Breath Only original music Foley competition. Any queries, send those to quirkyvoices@gmail.com. See you there, right?